Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is John Rubino, author of several books on the economy, including The Money Bubble. He founded the website DollarCollapse.com. He's speaking to us from near Port Angeles in Washington State. Welcome back to the show, John.
Hey, Jim.
John, U.S. stocks are down, but bond yields are way up. It's very unusual because normally money that's flowing out of stocks goes into bonds. Now stocks are saying recession while bonds are saying inflation. What's the story here? Are we being pulled in two directions at the same time?
That is the story. The markets don't know what to think now because we've got raging inflation and rising interest rates because of the inflation, and we've got plunging asset prices, especially in the stock market, but also in the bond market, and houses soon to be, you know, and so it's very hard to figure out where we are right now and where we'll be in 6 months, more importantly. We could easily be still in an inflationary environment in 6 months because of stuff we'll get to in a minute, or we could also be in a deflationary environment because of the stock market tanking and pulling everything else down with it. So we'll have to see. You know, this is not an easy time to be managing money, and it's a terrible time to be an economist whose job it is to predict something. You know, the Fed, of course, is always wrong, but the world is full of economists working for corporations where they actually expect results, and those guys have a problem now because this is an extremely unpredictable time, and we will only know in retrospect what all of it means that's going on today.
Well, the brilliant minds at the Fed, and I put quotation marks around brilliant, said a year ago, this inflation thing was just transitory. It'll soon disappear. I think it's the same people who told us that the price of gold was going to go to $25,000 an ounce as well.
Well, that's a totally different set of people. But, you know, the Fed not only said this inflation was transitory, they, going further back, they said there wouldn't be any inflation to begin with, but they were trying hard to get it up to 2%. And they succeeded on that count, plus a lot more. And, you know, looking back on it, it was kind of silly to think that we could increase the money supply by 40%, which is what we did during the pandemic, and not expect some kind of an impact on the price of gas and food and stocks and bonds and houses, you know, and so we saw everything go up dramatically, which in the aggregate amounts to inflation as it's defined by the media and by the government. And we're at crisis levels now, you know, 8 or 9% in the U.S. official inflation, which means that the actual rate is 12 or 15%, is a catastrophe. And so the government feels obligated to act, and yesterday, the Fed did act with a 0.75% increase in the Fed funds rate. But the idea that that's enough is kind of silly compared to the actual magnitude of inflation right now. So, you know, you're not going to stop 8% inflation with 3% short-term interest rates. So if inflation is our trend now, and if it's going to continue, then the Fed is going to be forced to raise interest rates much, much more than they have already, with all of that implies for financial asset prices. So we could be looking at a really, really messy second half of 2022. Well, actually, I think we kind of absolutely are, but it could be messy in ways that even a lot of the pessimists aren't predicting right now.
Yeah, so some of that messiness, do you have any idea what it could look like? You can't afford your mortgage anymore. Of course, in the U.S., you have 30-year mortgages. In Canada, most people have 5-year variable rates, which means you really are dancing to the tune set by the central banks.
Boy, a variable rate mortgage would be a disaster right now, yeah. Even as it is. 30-year fixed rate mortgages in the U.S. have gone from 2.5% to above 6% in the space of a year, which adds pretty much 50% to the monthly cost of a house bought with a mortgage now, which means a lot of the houses that were barely affordable, and most houses were just barely affordable a year ago, are now completely unaffordable for the people who would have bought a given house a year ago. So I think there's a decent chance that the housing market is front page news over the next half year in a negative way. In other words, home sales tanking and people not being able to manage their mortgages and going bankrupt and et cetera, et cetera. You know, that kind of thing. 2008, 2009 kinds of stuff could be happening again in housing.
On Wednesday, with the Fed raising rates into an equities bear market, has this ever happened before?
Yeah, that's what's kind of unique about what's going on right now is normally by the time there's an equities bear market, the Fed has already panicked and caved, and it's gone back to easing. Well, today the Fed has just begun its tightening. So they are raising interest rates in the face of that thing that they never allowed to happen before. You know, they would always act to stop an equities bear market because of something called the reverse wealth effect. In other words, when people's stocks tank, they feel stupid and they feel poor and they don't want to spend a lot of money going forward, so the economy slows down. And that's disastrous for an over-leveraged society, and the Fed always tries to stop that from happening, so it always panics when stocks start to fall. Well, this time, you know, we have already seen a 20% drop, and the Fed is promising, you know, another couple at least of 50 basis points, in other words, 0.5% rate increases in subsequent meetings, and they could do more, you know? So this is pretty unique. It's like they're finally willing to sacrifice the stock market in order to control inflation because this inflation has them so spooked. Well, they can blow up the stock market, and they're in the process of doing it now. So the old buy the dip strategy, which has worked for our entire adult lifetimes, might finally be about to stop working. And, you know, if that's the case, there's an awful lot of people out there who are using the rules that they've lived by for investing and who are just going to get crushed. Because if you're looking at today's stock market as a buying opportunity because all previous bear markets have been, you might be disappointed in a very painful way if the Fed goes ahead with its tightening. So we could see, you know, another 20% off of stock prices very easily from here and just get back down to the top range of fair valuation. So stocks are so overvalued that a 50% drop from here would just put them into reasonable range where value investors would want to start investing again. So anything could happen going forward. But I think the stock market is going to be the epicenter of a lot of the angst in the coming year.
Now, Japan's central bank has pegged the 10-year bonds yield at 0.25%, and the market's trying to force through that level while the yen is tanking. If the Bank of Japan fails, does the whole system implode?
Well, yeah, Japan is a, I don't want to say a special case because we're all major countries are financially a mess right now. But Japan took it to its logical extreme where they just, you know, they had a big bubble in the 1990s. And ever since, they've been running humongous deficits and building up ever bigger mountains of government debt in order to stave off a depression that might flow from deflation. They've built up absolutely massive amounts of government debt. They are, on a per capita basis, the most indebted government that has ever existed. And because of that, they've had to keep interest rates extremely low in order to be able to afford to pay interest on their debt. Well, so far they've always succeeded where they just pay, say, zero or negative 0.1% or something like that for their 10-year treasury bond. And the central bank offers to buy as many new bonds as it takes in order to keep rates at that peg. Well, they started doing that now with the 10-year bond at 0.25%. And the market challenged them by just dumping government bonds onto the central bank. And now the rate is up to 0.45%, which means the central bank has failed to hold a yield peg in its bond markets. And that means anything can happen now, because who in their right mind would lend money to somebody that's indebted as Japan is, that has no control over domestic interest rates? So it's completely possible that this is the beginning of a bond crisis in Japan that metastasizes into some kind of depression. So, you know, that was always out there. There were always people that were shorting the yen and shorting government bonds and shorting Japanese stocks, because they assumed this had to happen with as much debt as the Japanese government was taking on. So this might be that. We'll see. Again, this is another one of the things, these things we'll only know about in retrospect. But what's happening right now is kind of the first step down the road to something much, much more serious. So if it continues, if they don't fix this right away, then all hell could break loose in the Japanese financial markets.
Well, I remember in the 80s, Japan seemed to be the wave of the future. Their investors paying ridiculous amounts for New York condos and banks and so on. Then the Asian currency crisis hit in the early 90s. Is that the kind of situation we might be facing for 30 years, just very stagnant economy and whatever kind of money you lost, you're not going to get back?
I don't think we'll be that lucky. Japan managed to be fairly stable. We're buying all this stuff from Japan and giving them lots of money for that stuff, so they have this inflow that floats their economy. We're not in the U.S. We are not in that situation. We're a massively trade deficit driven economy, which means we buy more stuff from abroad than we earn by selling stuff, and that puts us in a much tougher situation where if our bond market starts to spin out of control, or inflation spikes, which is to say the dollar plunges in value, it's not clear what we have other than a very powerful military to stop the carnage. So it could be much quicker and much more devastating what happens to us than what happened to Japan. They hung on for three decades. We might reach a resolution to our current financial problems in two or three really brutal years. And I think that's, right now I would say that's a, 20 or 30% probability. In other words, a really short, sharp depression and then a reset, after which we go on in some other form. But, it could definitely happen from here.
Could you see us getting to food rationing? I mean, some countries like Sri Lanka are already in crisis because of the high cost of fuel and a shortage of food. Countries like India banning wheat exports. They want to keep it for themselves. Of course, the conflict between Russia and Ukraine drastically affecting grain supplies, corn as well. And sunflower seed oil is very popular, and that mostly comes from Ukraine. Could we all be getting ration cards? I think food rationing's already happening. I found kale in my Caesar salad the other day at the restaurant.
I mean, well, we definitely have some food issues ahead of us. Mm-hmm. And rationing would be, that would be an extreme scenario in the U.S. But, we're already seeing empty shelves for selected products, yeah. Like baby formula is a front page news story now where you just can't get certain kinds of baby formula in certain places in the U.S. That could spread, but I think it would mostly spread via higher prices. So we could see shortages of things that manifest as stuff getting way more expensive. And in general, food is a sector where things probably will get more expensive just because we've got such messed up supply chains. You know, the Russia-Ukraine war is one issue. We've got some very serious weather issues out there that are affecting planting and harvesting and will in 2023 result in much higher prices for some things. So that's all kind of baked into the cake now. Whether it ends up being, the equivalent of lines at the gas station where you have to wait for 4 hours to get what you want. That's probably at the extreme end of the probability spectrum, but food should be a big issue for us going forward for at least another year, and then we'll see. You know, there's no real obvious resolution to a lot of this stuff. So we'll have to get our supply chains back in order before the agricultural sector settles back down, and it's not clear how we're going to do that. So it's definitely a one-year problem, but possibly a 3 to 5 year problem out there.
We'll have more with John Rubino right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with John Rubino. John, cryptos have shed $2 trillion of cap market so far this year. Take a look at Bitcoin from the high 60s down to $20,000. Some people now believe it could go down to $8,000, $5,000. And some cryptos have totally disappeared. So what's going on for all these people who poured all these trillions into crypto?
Well, several things are happening with cryptos. One is that it just has cycles. You know, if you look at the Bitcoin chart, what's happened lately is not out of the ordinary. It'll go up by 5,000%, then drop by 80%, and then repeat over and over again. That's what he's done. And so in the history of cryptos, what you're seeing with Bitcoin at least is not abnormal. That's just how it trades. Another thing about cryptos is that they tend to kind of trade like tech stocks. In other words, they're risk-on assets, not safe haven assets. So when tech stocks are rocking like they have been for the last few years, cryptos just get swept along with it. And that's part of the huge bull market that has taken place in Bitcoin, Ethereum, and a lot of the other smaller cryptos out there. And now that tech stocks are getting whacked, you're seeing cryptos get whacked right along with them. So that also is not out of the ordinary. What is a bit out of the ordinary now is the explosions that we're starting to see in some in things like stablecoins. And NFTs are plunging in price, apparently. And some of the other exchanges where these things are just blowing up. And they're laying people off and they're stiffing their customers. In other words, they're not letting them withdraw. And that risks souring sentiment about the whole crypto sector in a way that'll make it hard to come back from. So we'll see how this goes. Right now, there are rumblings about some other implosions in the sector that seem to be imminent. So we'll have to see how those things play out, how they're dealt with, and what effect that has on a lot of other people in the crypto space. Oh, and plus, there are a lot of big crypto investors who did it with borrowed money. So they're looking at margin calls right now, which might lead them to dump their cryptos in order to cover the margin calls, which might push prices down further, which might lead to more margin calls, you know, so that all of this stuff is still in play. Mm-hmm. And it looks very messy. But if you look at the history of Bitcoin, at least, it looks extremely messy right before it turns around and rockets back to some new high. So I wouldn't write cryptos off just based on their previous trading behavior. But I would be kind of cautious about them and I would put some time into understanding the dynamics of this market before jumping in with any kind of money.
Now, what about NFTs in this situation? Again, you're buying a digital product, some drunk monkey or something picture. Was this thing a scam from the start?
Yeah. NFTs were always just this weird make-believe thing that that happened because there was way too much money sloshing around out there, and people felt free to buy stupid things because they were playing with house money. But an NFT is basically just a digital image of something that is registered on a blockchain. So you own the only blockchain registered image of something. But it might be a thing where there are a million other images out there that are identical. You know, there's nothing different about the NFT you own from all the other images you can just download off of Google Image or whatever. And so in that sense, it's not clear what the value of an NFT really is. And things like that in bear markets tend to be the first things that get dumped, because if you've got some stuff that you really value, you think it's undervalued, you think it's going to go up, and you think it's relatively safe, you tend to hold on to that, and you dump the frivolous stuff. You know, you sell your RV and your motorcycle and your boat, and you dump your NFTs and your penny tech stocks and your biotech, 15 cents a share stocks, things like that. You get rid of them just because you don't know whether they'll survive. So NFTs are going to be tossed out with the rest of the bubble assets as this plays out.
And then there were the people who bought virtual real estate on a virtual island, paying real money for something that doesn't exist. Like I said right from the start of this whole thing with NFTs and virtual real estate, not so much the cryptocurrencies, but it just smelled and looked so much like tulip mania in the early 1600s in Holland.
Yeah. When you give people an awful lot of extra money beyond a certain point, they lose their discrimination and start buying anything that happens to be going up, which makes that thing go up even more, which sucks in more dumb money, and you get this kind of a frenzy at the top of a bubble. We can go back through the previous few bubbles for some really outrageous examples. But suffice it to say that there's a bunch of them around now that qualify as silly bubble assets that will go down to their intrinsic value, which is pretty close to zero in a lot of cases. And you just have to hope that you're not one of the people who loaded up on stuff like this. And if you are, cut your losses. Don't be buying the dips in things like NFTs.
With mortgages now around 6%, will this crush housing?
Very possibly. Housing, what was becoming a bubble, it wasn't as extreme a bubble as it was in 2006, 2007, at least in the U.S., but there was a lot of bubble-like behavior where there were bidding wars all over the place for houses, and the asking price had become the low point for the negotiating process instead of the high point. And a lot of houses were selling at big premiums to asking price and on and on, and that's the kind of thing that is unsustainable because prices rise to the point where houses are just unaffordable, and that had happened in the U.S. So we were always going to see a housing downturn, even if interest rates didn't go up. And now interest rates have gone up to the point where a house is 50% more expensive if you finance it than it was 2 years ago. So what we're seeing now is sellers start to cut their asking prices and buyers basically just withdraw because they can't afford to take out a mortgage on the houses they were looking at, and they really don't want to step way down to some little crappy house that they'd already dismissed as not viable. So they're just going to pull back. And so we'll just see kind of an air pocket under the price of a lot of houses right now, which is, it's normal. It's a normal market thing, but it's going to be really painful for a lot of people in this space because if you've made a leveraged bet on real estate, then you're going to find out that leverage is a double-edged sword, and you're going to suffer badly. But, you'll have learned a lesson. You'll be a smarter investor after that happens.
Gold and silver are being suppressed by the possible recession, but will they soar when the Fed finally caves in?
Fascinating situation for precious metals right now, because with inflation being what it is, you would expect gold and silver to be roaring. Gold should double in an 8% inflation environment, and silver should quadruple. But that isn't happening implies that people are looking a little bit ahead. They're saying, okay, inflation is way up. The Fed is going to be forced to raise interest rates dramatically, and the bond market is going to raise interest rates at the long end. They're going to overdo it. They're going to give us a massive recession, which will be very deflationary. So why do I want to own an inflation hedge like gold and silver? And if that's as far as it goes, that's a thought process that takes you to the right place, which is don't buy gold and silver. However, there's one more step after that, which is that as soon as we tip into a deflationary recession, the Fed's going to shift gears and just shove interest rates down like you've never seen before. You know, we're going to go from, let's say, 4% Fed funds rate to negative 2% in the next cycle, and it's going to happen very quickly in big chunks because the Fed is going to be just panicked by how things start to fall apart. And in that kind of an environment, when the real interest rates are negative and getting more negative, that's great for gold and silver. So I think that looking two or three steps ahead would lead you to see gold and silver as something you might want to be nibbling at now and buying kind of regularly, just, you know, dollar cost average, knowing that you can't predict the timing perfectly of how all this plays out. But since we're living on internet time now, it could all play out pretty quickly. We could have a big market crash next month that spooks the Fed to the point that it starts cutting interest rates. That could all happen before you know it. And if it does, gold and silver will take off. So, personally, I'm still looking at lowball bids on good quality gold and silver mining stocks as very interesting at these levels. Because I don't think it'll be 5 years. I think it'll be much, much less than that before we're back in, a 2008, 2009 kind of monetary environment where every central bank in the world is just dumping money on every troubled industry out there, and it sends precious metals up. So it won't be long, in other words.
John, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Sure thing, Jim.
My guest has been John Rubino, author of several books on the economy, including The Money Bubble. He founded the website dollarcollapse.com. If you have any questions for John or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com and we'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.